This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-600-1645. That's 800-600-1645. 800-600-1645.
Somehow or another, I missed along the way that there was a lot of us that hadn't connected to the real principles of the day after 9/11. That was what the 9/12 Project was all about.
Sometimes I come here early in the morning before the show, and I sit in this room by myself, and I just think about what I'm going to do that day. It's quiet here. The people who work with me tell me I overthink everything, and perhaps I do. But I'm to this place now to where I record a show, and I almost feel like I'm recording it for my grandchildren. Some people would say that that's not good. But it comes from being in this vault where we are surrounded by history. And trying to find our answers through history, I know that this is an important time period in the history of the world. People are going to go back and look at this time period. What are the things that they're going to see? What are they going to look for? What are we leaving behind? I just told the curator of the vault to get together with me and look at some Steve Jobs stuff. I want to see if we can find some old Apple stuff that's probably not worth very much now, but it will be someday. I learned that from the curator of the Smithsonian, the American Heritage Museum at the Smithsonian. When he brought me into the Smithsonian, and it was a room full of drawers and locked drawers and locked closets. And he said, I want to show you some things. He said, you'll love this. And he opened up his locked drawer and he pulled it out, and it was all felt or velvet inside. And it was George Washington's baptismal dress. He pulls out another drawer. And it was a flag made by the Jefferson people, saying horrible things about the Adams presidency. And he said, I think you'll really like this. He unlocked and opened up another drawer. And I remember saying to him, really? He said, yeah. And it was badges and passes and cups and I think a t-shirt and airline tickets from Restoring Honor in Washington, D.C. And I said, you saved this? He said, we learned long ago it's better to find the things during the events when we think that it's something big, that we save it while we can instead of having to pay a fortune for it at auction. That moment in the birth of my grandchildren and looking at history and putting this vault together has given me a different viewpoint. What are they going to say about us? In the previous episode, we started looking at the principles and values of the 912 Project, something that in 2009 I started when I was at Fox, and it was one of the most watched cable television shows of all time. And people gathered together from all over the country, and they were all seeking an answer. And I remember thinking, I don't have an answer. I have this collection of principles and values, and I know what we should feel like, but I don't know how to do them. And I'm certainly not a politician. I don't know how to organize people. I'm bad at all of that stuff. But I put the values and the principles out. I've been looking at them a lot personally lately, because it's how we find our way back home. It's how we find our way back to each other. It's how, even if it isn't on this continent, the American experiment survives. Somebody starts to live these principles. So let me show you where we were and where we're going today. We did honesty, the truth. You have to seek the truth. You have to have the reverence for the truth, reverence for God, reverence for things that are much bigger than you. Hope. Hope comes from having faith in the truth and revering the truth. It will give you hope even when you step out and say, I'm not sure if this is the right way. Thrift. Having things of value, knowing that not everything is disposable in life, that even these principles which we have disposed of have real value. And tonight, we begin with humility. So when you guys think of humble, name some people you think of. Humble.
Am I supposed to say you?
Yes. No. Of course, I'm the most humble and the greatest. Who is, like, it doesn't have to even be now. If you can name somebody now that you think of as truly humble.
I'd have to go back to my faith in President Monson.
I mean, okay, he's like the Pope of your church, and he is the Pope.
Pope
Francis is, he's really humble.
I always think of kids, children. They seem humble to me because they're so aware of their own strengths and what they can do, and yet so aware of their inability. Right, like I have a 2-year-old, so I watch him all the time, and he's always asking for the help he needs, but he's wanting to do as much as he can on his own, which to me is kind of a perfect balance of humility.
My favorite story from Halloween is your story with your son.
So, trick-or-treating is so much fun, and you hope for your 2-year-old that they're not traumatized by the monsters in the neighborhood
right.
or all of those things that can happen. But he kind of got it. He understood that we were going to go from house to house and get candy, and he got his little pumpkin to put the candy in and all of those wonderful things that you hope. And he's all ready, and he's dressed in his dinosaur outfit. We go to the first house, and he says, trick-or-treat. He goes, trick-or-treat, and they give him candy, and he says, thank you. We're so proud. We've prepped him. He's done all the right things. And then his next sentence is, can I come in? And he wants to go in and talk to the people. And we're like, oh, sorry. I'm sorry. You can't come in. And then he starts to cry. And he said, please, can I come in? And we had to say no, he couldn't come in. And then he cries all the way walking away. He's like, okay, thank you. And then he leaves, and we get out to the street. We say, take a deep breath. Just don't go in. We just ask for candy. We say, trick or treat. And they give us candy, and we leave. He's like, okay. We get to the next house. Can I come in? Every house. We do 20 houses. He's just sobbing at this point.
I thought this was child abuse myself after 10 houses. And she's like, no, we thought every time. We thought the next time.
Yeah, because he said, I'll get it. But what he wanted to visit, candy to him wasn't the goal.
People.
It was, I want to go and get to know these people. Obviously, if we're coming to their house, then what we do is we spend time with them. so that we can be together as a community. That to him was the natural state of things, not being afraid of people, but going into their homes and getting to know them.
Can I come in?
So the idea of humility is, I remember I was the least humble person you could imagine. And this is in my drinking days, and I had just sobered up. This is before I met Tanya, and I was not drinking, but I wasn't sober yet. And I had been praying for humility. And don't ever pray for humility, because that's the one, that's like the alarm bell that... Like, somebody up in heaven just rings that, and God's like, you got to be kidding me. Somebody's praying for this? I'll give them that. And it happens fast. And I was praying for humility, and a guy came, and I was pretty full of myself, and I was running the stations for Clear Channel. There were three of them, and I was running them, mainly into the ground, but I was running them. And I was the morning guy. And I had this nice office and everything else, and he came in, and he hated me. And he said, nice office. I said, thank you. And he said, you know, you think you're pretty hot stuff. And I said, well, no, yes and no. I was in the point where I was trying to be honest too all the time. Well, yes, but no. And he said, you know what's going to happen? He said, tomorrow, I want you out of this office. And I'm going to add some new duties to your day. And I said, okay. And he said, I want you to do what are called the dubs. This was the lowest job on the ladder. Interns do this. And then when an intern graduates to a minimum wage job, then you get that job. And I said, what? I left. I went to go talk to a friend who was really, really spiritual. And I was so mad. I was just beside myself. And I said, I can't believe after all these years, this guy would... She looked at me and she said, you're kidding, right? And I said, what? She said, you've been telling me for weeks you've been praying for humility. Your prayer was just answered. Totally different look. I went to him, and this was not my intent, but I went to him the next day, and I thanked him. And I said, there's not going to be anybody better at doing dubs than me. I'm going to be the best at it. Wow. I get it. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. This was not my intent, but that drove him out of his mind. He was so angry because he didn't think I was sincere.
Right. He probably
he was like,
you were...
you're screwing with me. And I was so sincere. And I was like, no. I know you're mad at me, but don't, because this is a gift. Thank you. Anyway, you can't do anything without humility. You can't find out who you really are and what you're supposed to be and where you're supposed to walk without humility, because you think you know. And until you learn, I don't know, Jack, you screwed up. And it's something, unfortunately, that you have to learn over and over again. Mm. Over and over again.
Well, because it's so easy once you achieve something, anything, even small, to think, now I've got this.
No, I'm the master of humility. No, I've got it down in space. No, seriously, you want to know about humility? I'm the guy to talk to. I can tell. Anyway, I brought this out of the vault because I just think it is quintessential humility. And it was written 3 days before Christmas in 1975, 4 days before Christmas 1975. It was written to a G.G. Wagner in New York. Many thanks for your kind letter of 11-11-75. I'm glad you were happy that all went well at the United Nations. But I must tell you, I felt like a fish out of water in that crowd of businessmen and world leaders. I never feel like that with the crowds much greater, but much closer to our kind, the lepers, the dying, the unwanted, the helpless, the unloved, and the lonely. Thank you for inviting me, for I have a better understanding of the rich. who day after day have to accept the role of entertaining and being entertained. Their gatherings certainly need the presence of Jesus very much. Have a happy and holy Christmas and all of God's blessings. In 1976, please pray for me as I do for you, Mother Teresa. Just so simple.
So humble.
She is a woman who is, the Pope gave her an armored limousine. Do you know this story?
No.
Pope gave her an armored limousine, his armored limousine, Pope John Paul, because she had, I mean, who wants to kill Mother Teresa? She had massive death threats. And she got it, and she said, first she begged not to have it, and the Pope said, you cannot be killed. You have to protect yourself. And she said, nobody's going to kill Mother Teresa. And he said, well, let's trust the Lord, but let's also do our things. And he said, and it's not like it's new. It's a used armored limousine. And she got it, and she looked at it, and she said, oh, I just don't know what to do with this thing. She sold it, and she gave all of the money to the poor because it just wasn't her.
Read that part again about entertain. I hope they have to be to entertain.
She said, I have a better understanding of the rich now who day after day have to accept the role of entertaining and be entertained.
I think that's scary with our gadgets and our iPads and all the things that we have, because even those of us who aren't rich are now either spending our time entertaining or being entertained. And I wonder how much of that takes away from our ability to be humble.
Good point.
I don't think anybody is pondering anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest problem I had, and I didn't realize this until I went out and I vacationed in the middle of the mountains. I had been working in New York City for 2 years, on Fox for 2 years, height of the Fox insanity. And I went out, and I was in the middle of the mountains, and we were camping. And I came out in the middle of the night, and I just looked up. The fire had gone out, and I just looked up. And it was so bright, I could see everything. And I could see the colors. It's almost, you could see the depth of the Milky Way. Mm-hmm. And immediately started to ponder how insignificant I am. That taught me so much about the problems with New York City and all cities, every city we live in. It's not until you get outside and see the size of the room we're in that you realize I am nothing. I'm so inconsequential in the grand scheme of things. Living in New York, you didn't even really notice the moon because the moon was usually behind buildings and it wasn't as grand as man's buildings. Standing at the foot of the Empire State Building, standing looking down at the Chrysler Building is magnificent. And you only think about man and you think about your place in that island.
Yes, you do. You think of how you fit into that. And yet when you are in the mountains and you feel that, it's like standing at the edge of the ocean, right? And you get that sense of how massive everything is. And when you're in the mountains and you see the universe and realize how inconsequential you are and yet how infinitely important you individually are to God, that is where humility comes in, right? I'm completely inconsequential and yet completely important all at the same time. And to me, that's why I say little children, that is what humility is, because you can recognize both your potential greatness and yet your inability to achieve that greatness without other help.
I'm sure I didn't do this when I wrote these in 2008 or 9, but at least the first six kind of play into each other. You have to know what the truth is and then have reverence for it, which will give you faith and hope. And with that faith and hope, you see that some things have real lasting value. And they don't come from anything that you've done, which brings you to humility, which takes you right in to our next, which is charity, which Jeremy and
have a couple
I have
of Lincoln.
A couple of really cool things we'll show you.
Yeah.
I love this picture. This is an original picture of the second inaugural speech by Abraham Lincoln, and we've shown it to you before where John Wilkes Booth is up here in the balcony. And everybody focuses there, but they don't focus down here at all, where you can tell most of the people aren't even listening. And the people, the throng of people, are blurry. They're moving. They're rustling. Abraham Lincoln didn't have a strong, booming voice, and this is outside. You see the people up in the stands? Some of them are looking that way, but most of them aren't. Nobody's hearing what he's saying. How hard it must have been for him. He came out and he said a few things. It's four paragraphs. He said, both sides read the same Bible, and we pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other. It may seem strange that any man should dare ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of the other man's face. Listen to this. But let us not judge. The prayers of both cannot be answered. That of neither has been answered fully. Abraham Lincoln had just left the Senate where he was really... Johnson, his vice president, was drunk and was calling for revenge. That's what the people in this crowd, they would have listened to that. That's what they wanted. They wanted him to say, and we're going to make the South pay. And instead, he said, the Almighty has his own purposes. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to the man by whom the offense cometh. If we should suppose that American slavery is one of those offenses which, in the providence of God, must need come, but which, having continued through his appointed time, he now wills to remove, that he gives to both North and South this terrible war, as the woe due to those by whom the offense came, shall we discern therein any departure from those divine attributes which the believers in a living God always ascribe to him? Fondly we do hope, fervently we do pray, that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away. But yet, if God wills that it continue until all of the wealth piled on the bondsman's 250 years of unrequited toil shall be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn by the lash shall be paid by another drawn by the sword, as it was said 3,000 years ago, so it still must be said, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether, with malice toward none and charity for all. Firmness, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive to finish on the work that we're in and to bind up the nation's wounds and to care for him who shall have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which we may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all other nations. That took courage to ask for charity.
Guys, have you found it yet?
Yes.
That took courage to ask for charity because there was another way to go, and it was hate. It was the Klan, and it went that way. And That doesn't take guts. That doesn't take courage. That is a perversion of the truth. That's reverence of what? The race? Hope in fear? Valuing what? Again, race? Or that you're right?
Yeah, because there is somehow an anger, right? You stir up a nation to anger, and then they'll believe that. Because I think a lot of people, unfortunately, believe they're being courageous.
Yeah, they do.
Right? They believe that they're having hope or reverence for something. They are taking an emotion they have and turning it into something else.
That's why it's not the, you know, one values or the three. You can't look at these separately. You can't just have truth and reverence. You have to have all of these. You have to have honesty, reverence, hope, value, thrift, humility, and charity. That's only half of them. But if any of these are missing, then you know that it's not right.
But no wonder it's such a hard thing, because as you work on any one of them,
the others,
right,
slip away.
The others can slip away. So
easily.
Especially humility.
Yeah, so it's a constant, you know, if it takes all 12 of them, like a boat, it takes 12 of them to anchor you down, it has to be tied in more than one spot, right? Like, then it can easily come, one can easily become untied while you're working on tying up a different one.
And the jacket, which can we ever take this out of this glass, Jeremy?
Yeah, we can.
That wouldn't terrify you to take it out?
It wouldn't terrify me to take it out. It would be a little surreal to touch. Don't you think? It would be a little... This is Lincoln's collar in which he was killed in, the jacket that he was wearing that night.
It would be, to touch it. It would be, wow. If you flip it over, you notice this. So you've got the white lining here that was inside of the black jacket.
Mm-hmm.
This is that white lining. But look at this dark stain right here.
Yeah.
And being a boy growing up, knowing how blood stains things with falling down and scraping your knee or whatnot, you can see there very similar to what it would have been like.
When you told that story in the episode, when you first got these, on the day these came, you told the story about the actress sitting and cradling.
Oh, it's horrible.
You know,
horrible.
Cradling his head.
Horrible.
And then you think about this, like the... This piece of clothing was on him when that was happening.
But you also think, again, what kind of man, I asked you a minute ago, can you name somebody humble? And we went to spiritual leaders. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Who? That's a serious question. Who do we know that exhibits in public these things except some spiritual leaders?
Mike Lee.
Very good.
I would say of the people that I know who are known, I mean, I can think of people in my own life that I think I know, but I would say of the famous, if you want to call, you know, Mike would even hate to be called famous. But of the famous people that I know, I would say Mike Lee is a lot of these things.
I was on the phone with him, and somebody had done something wildly unchristian. And I was on the phone with him, and I said, "Wow, that's a little unchristian, huh?" And I was a little flippant, and he said, "Oh, I wouldn't say it that way." And I was like, "Stop it, Mike. Stop."
But that's why.
But he's right.
And that's why you want someone, I'm not saying it has to be him, but that's why you want someone like that sitting on the Supreme Court.
But again,
someone who really can.
But again.
These values are part of who he is.
Isn't that what you want in a dad?
Yes.
Isn't that what you want in a business owner?
It's what you want in
everything.
But So I can't say the people who I know here, who work, who you have found in your office, because nobody would know them, right? Like I could turn and say, oh, well, Jeremy is those things. And he is. I have never seen Jeremy not be those,
not those things.
He's all of those things.
Yeah.
But
massive stick in the mud.
But to the people at home who don't know him, that's not you know, it's not as meaningful. But Jeremy is definitely those things.
But where is the person in public?
There.
So would you put maybe a Herman Cain who lost because a lot of these things he did exude? And they just marched
not Herman,
all over.
You mean not Herman Cain, Ben Carson?
Ben Carson, sorry, Ben Carson. He got...
Yeah, I would put him. Yeah, I would put him in that category.
I would too.
And I think a lot of
And I think I would actually put... I mean, we're only going to politics. And politics is the tail of the dog. It's the last thing. Culture is on the front. It's the nose of the dog. So where in culture? Because I would also put, I would put Marco Rubio possibly up there. I would put the Bushes in this.
So I
disagree with them, but I think they exude a lot of these things.
So I would put a George Clooney into a lot of these.
I think I would, yeah.
I would put him into a lot of these categories. I think there are people.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, that doesn't mean I agree with all of their stances on things.
No, you don't have to.
But do I think he tries to live these 12 values?
I think when he was saying... When they came to him and said, wait a minute, you're holding a $30,000 a seat fundraiser and it's for the oppressed? He came, he answered that question with, you're right.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
So
you're right.
I think there are people who culturally we can look at and say, I may not agree with their politics, but are they trying to live these? Are they trying? None of us are living them perfectly.
No, nobody is.
But are they trying to live these values, you know, from what I can observe, yeah, there's probably more of them. There's probably more of them, and we're just not judging them by these values.
Okay, so let's go to sincerity. Let's go to seven.
What do you remember about Ronald Reagan and the years that Ronald Reagan was in office?
Well, for me, I remember the day that he was shot because I remember coming home and watching nothing but that on the news
over and over again,
and that how terrifying it was. I was 2.5, 3 when Kennedy was shot.
So, I was going to say when Reagan was shot. Holy cow!
No.
I've really earned my white hair.
And so I don't remember it because I couldn't understand what was going on. But I remember the adults, you know, being in this turmoil. Mm-hmm. Right, I can remember that. And I can remember them gathering and the hushed tones and the talking. And so when I was now out of high school and it was happening, then I could understand what I had seen as a little girl and couldn't comprehend. And I remember the feeling of pride and the feeling of being able to get behind someone because he seemed so genuine, so authentic. So right, we hadn't. In my lifetime that I could remember, I know that that's how Kennedy felt to people too, but in my lifetime, we finally had someone like that that felt
real,
real to us. And so we felt like we could follow him anywhere, and we needed that. You know, you just said something about a dad. Mm-hmm. We want a dad to have all these characteristics. He felt like he had... I wasn't old enough to be studying or know anything, so I can't really speak to whether he did or didn't, but he felt like that, and he made me feel like I could be those things, and he made the country feel like they could be those things. That's what I remember. And so that day of feeling like maybe that would be taken away was a devastating day, right? You could feel that feeling of all this is fragile. All these values are fragile. They could slip away from us at any time. And that's what he gave us.
Did you grow up in the time, or let me rephrase it, do you remember how scary the Soviet nuclear threat was?
Oh, my goodness. We did practices.
Yeah, so did
we. You know, we did drills where you get under your desk or drills where you go down into the basement and how you deal with fallout and how you deal with so many things.
I remember you remember, this is way before my time, but duck and cover.
Goodness.
Yeah, and so, and I remember doing a drill and getting underneath our desk, which were those big heavy metal desks with the wooden tops that open up, getting underneath that desk
and thinking, this isn't going to do anything.
Right. I'm
if dead.
This building
if this
collapses,
goes down, why am I under this desk? Right. They're going to find us all underneath our desks. And I remember the fear of global annihilation. And the first, I think, real public awareness that I had of a loss was probably Vietnam. I remember being afraid of having to go to Vietnam. And I remember, I don't remember, third or fourth grade, hearing that it was over. They announced it in class, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to die. And then Ronald Reagan, and I was in my last year of high school, and I remember him getting shot and thinking, what does that mean? What is that, the Russians? What does that mean? We look at Ronald Reagan as so strong. I want to share one of the most heart-wrenching things I think we have. It is right after he's announced to the world that he has Alzheimer's. And you remember, he was estranged from his older children.
Yes.
And he loved them. But they had turned against him over political reasons. And, I mean, Ronald Reagan did so much that he never got credit for. And I really, truly believe he did care and love. But Patty was a drug addict and out of control and had really nothing good to say about Dad. This was written March 2nd, 1991, in his own handwriting to Patty on presidential stationery. It says, "Dear Patty, it was good to hear from you. As the song goes, the days dwindle down to a precious few. In view of my recent birthday, I find that song appropriate. Patty, I think a talk between us is the answer to some of our differences. There are extremists on both sides of every issue, but reasonable people should look into both sides and to see if every charge or countercharge is justified by the facts. Even if there are differences, does that ever justify a family separation? We can disagree on things without abandoning our family relationship. I remember a little girl who sat on my lap and asked me to marry her. Love, Dad." I wanted to pull this out because of sincerity. Here's a dad who knows what the truth is and is sincerely, I can imagine this, it's about politics.
And then, and who says, if we just will sit and talk and listen to each other. Obviously, we can get past our differences if we'll just talk and listen to each other.
There's more to this story. And it leads to the next one. So, moderation. The really, truly tragic part of the story is that they never got back together. And the reason why we have this is because at the time she sold it for drugs.
She sold the letter her dad wrote her for drugs. Oh, my goodness.
And awful.
not a judgment on her.
No, but
I know that we both have history of at least familial problems.
But it shows how when you... Because moderation has always been a hard one for me, right? Because you don't want to be moderately honest. You don't want to have moderate amounts of hope, right? So it's always been... As a kid, I didn't understand the moderation thing because of that, right? Like, you don't want to be moderately good person. You want to be an extremely good person. So moderation... In what? Moderation how? I mean, help me understand that, because I have a tough time with that one.
So do I. That's why I'm an alcoholic. I mean, I'm not good at moderation myself. It's easy to see this, and that's what I wanted to talk about, was it's easy to see moderation and say, oh my gosh, if she wasn't, you know what I mean, there's no moderation on drugs, but I mean, if she could have learned moderation, or she could have not been so extreme with her relationship,
so maybe
everything would have changed.
That's what it means, is not being extreme, because we just talked about you don't want to be moderately honest, but by the same token, if you're spending all of your time trying to be honest, then you're avoiding the other things.
That sweater makes you look dumpy and fat.
Wow. Thanks.
Okay. That's extreme honesty.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
That was not.
It doesn't. But that's.
So you could be moderately honest.
I could be moderately honest. I could be moderately honest.
I could live with moderately honest.
Yes. And that's where probably, I mean, if we look at it, and this, as you know, has been my concern for years, that we are surrounded by extremists. And we've let extremists into our own camp. And I see people now quote Thomas Jefferson, "The tree of liberty has to be replenished with the blood of patriots." Okay. Yes, he did say that. That is also the t-shirt that Timothy McVeigh was wearing at the Oklahoma City bombing. And that's not what he meant. He meant that Thomas Jefferson believed that every generation should decide for themselves what the system is. It's one reason why I am so against grandfather clauses and so against estate, where you pass it on from one generation, land, where you pass that land on and you lock it in for all time, a trust on land. It's not right. If you want to give it to your children and your children can decide to hold it that way, that's fine. But who are you to rule beyond the grave? That's what he was talking about, that every generation needs to make and fight its own battles. And we do. But we are... The greatest extremist of all was Christ. The biggest extremist of all. And yet, the people begged for Barabbas. And they begged for Barabbas because he was going to kill and overthrow Pilate and the Romans. That's the way they wanted it. They don't see the true extremists are the extremists that work through peace.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-600-1645. That's 800-600-1645. 800-600-1645.